It is our joy to present to you a conference from the third series of retreat conferences given by Father John A. Hardin, S.J. Father Hardin is a professor of theology and is well known as an author, lecturer, and retreat master. In these conferences, Father treats of many topics of present-day interest to any Catholic. They will prove to be of assistance to anyone trying to live a Christian life in today's world, whether he be layman, religious, or priest. In the following conference, Father Hardin speaks on the subject, Sacrifice, Holy Communion, and Religious Life. Father Hardin.
In many ways, I would consider this the basic mystery of our faith, certainly for us religious. Because whatever else Christianity means and religious life as a specially perfect expression of Christianity, it means sacrifice. What I'd like to do is to look at two aspects of our subject. First, to examine the doctrine, that is, the meaning of the Eucharist as sacrifice, and then make some applications or draw some implications from the doctrine for our better religious life. We've already seen that the Eucharist is, first of all and fundamentally, a presence, meaning that Christ, having become incarnate, instead of just leaving us the pleasant memory of his visible stay on earth, devised the means of ensuring his continuing abiding among us as man, invisible, impalpable to our senses, but we believe really here. We've also seen that because it is Jesus whom we receive in communion, we therefore receive God incarnate, and since God is love, we receive the love incarnate in order to make it possible for us, like him, to love even unto death. And remember, it's loving others, even to dying for them, sounds like a poetic flourish. It isn't. That's our faith. But we know that Christ not only instituted the Eucharist as his continuing human presence on earth, or gave us the privilege of receiving him daily, in fact, his body into ours, his human mind and will into ours. Christ, as you know, has two minds, two wills. He must, since he has two natures. And since it is through that humanity that the gifts of the divinity flow, our physical contact with Christ's human nature makes him supereminently the way by which we receive his life. But that is not all. Christ also devised a way of continuing his sacrifice, which he made on Calvary, so that if we ask, and the Church has defined it for us, what is the Mass? We are told, and we teach others, the Mass is Calvary reenacted. How so? Because we believe it is the same Jesus in his twofold function of priest or the one who offers and the victim as the one who is offered, always keeping in mind that what is distinctive about the sacrifice of the new law is, first, that the priest who is making the sacrifice is God himself in human form. But what is specially significant and will be the basis of our meditation now is the fact that, unlike in the old law, where the priests offered sacrifices, objects outside themselves, Christ offered himself. So it's not merely that on the cross Christ offered a sacrifice, but that he offered himself. So then we ask, how is it that the Mass is the same as Calvary? Well, because it's the same human being. And by the way, let's keep in mind that if we lose sight of the fact that it is a human being on the altar, we can still talk about sacrifice, but theologically it has no meaning, because only a human being can offer a sacrifice. The Son of God, qua the Son of God, couldn't possibly offer a sacrifice to his Father. The Son had to become a man, and only as man, with a human free will, could he offer a sacrifice. So that we cannot overstress the importance of believing and realizing that it is a human being, Jesus in the fullness of his humanity, who becomes really present in the Eucharist and thereby makes sacrifice possible, since only a human will can offer a sacrifice. Well, so it is. Then the Mass and Calvary are the same, because there is the same human victim and the same human priest. Yet you're also told that there is one big difference, namely that on Calvary the sacrifice was a bloody one. In the Mass it is not bloody. So much we believe, and I trust well know. But we must add to what the Council of Trent has solemnly taught us about the Mass. True enough, the two sacrifices, to use the plural, are the same for the reasons given. On the other hand, the two are vastly different, not only or mainly because Calvary was bloody and the Mass is not bloody, but, see if I can be clear, on the cross it was only Christ in his own physical person who was priest and victim. No church yet existed. It is the church's common teaching that the church was born of the open side of Christ on Calvary, that because of the crucifixion and in Christ's death, the church, that's us, came into existence. Whereas in the Mass, since Calvary, it is no longer just the physical person of Jesus alone who is offering and being offered. It is He and we, so that we now speak correctly of the Mass being the sacrifice of the mystical body of Christ, head and members, what then is the difference? Well, that on the cross, it was Christ offering and offering himself in his own physical person. Whereas in the Mass, though he indeed continues offering himself, though indeed, but not just he alone, it is also he offering us, and we, of course, in turn, to be offering ourselves, so that it is both Christ as the head and we as the members of the mystical body who are offering, and he always does his part, but we also who are to offer and be offered. So that, when we come back to ask, is it correct as a simple statement to repeat that Calvary was bloody and the Mass is unbloody? Not quite. Because while surely the Mass is unbloody on Christ's side, he being immortal, glorified, can no longer die, but the Mass is supposed to be, or at least it can well be, quite bloody on our side. And you know there's blood that can be shed without dying. It is quite possible to suffer spiritually and to shed, if you wish, spiritual blood. In fact, and this is about the fifth time I'm coming back to the same subject, hoping that I will not be too unclear, that if the essence of the cross was sacrifice, and the essence of the Mass he is sacrifice, that Christ has already made his sacrifice, though we believe that every time the elements of bread and wine are separately consecrated, he renews his act of the will, being willing to die if he could. But he cannot die. Let me change the accent. He cannot die, but we can. And we can die not only once, because every time we make a sacrifice, depending on the degree of our immolation, we are offering ourselves to God. Before I go on to the practical implications, let me touch upon one element which may help to clarify what, after all, is a deep mystery, but that I hope can be as clear as our faith and understanding can make it. Suppose in communist-occupied territory a Catholic were taken to prison for say, not teaching Marxism, as, for example, all teachers are required in schools under communist domination. And you were told that unless he or she agreed to deny their faith, they would die. Suppose the person refused and were sentenced to death. Suppose, shortly after being condemned to death, the person were reprieved, acquitted, told to behave himself, and released. Suppose, shortly after, the person were taken into prison again on the same charge. Let's say that happened 6 times. The 7th time, the person were taken into prison, sentenced to die, and executed. Now we ask, how many times has that person sacrificed his life for God? 7 times, right? Though there was only one physical death. Let's reverse the process. Christ began by dying. Now, no one else except he can do this. He died physically only once. Yet, we believe that every time that Mass is offered, since the essence of sacrifice is in the will, keep that in mind, that even though Christ physically died only once, yet we can at least begin to understand through the analogy which I gave, which is classic, how one death physically may nevertheless mean many sacrifices spiritually, because as long as the person is willing to die, that willingness before God is equal to the fact. We then believe that every time that Mass is offered, Christ, having proved the sincerity of his sacrifice by really dying, then, since it is a human being, the eternal high priest in heaven, right? And also on earth in the real presence. Don't let go of that humanity. Otherwise, so many things in our faith cannot be explained, notably the mystery of the Eucharistic sacrifice. Consequently, in the Mass, though there are upwards of 400,000 Masses offered daily throughout the world, we are bidden to believe, and we do believe, that in each one of those, the sincerity of Christ's oblation is unquestioned. If he could die, he would, where the would means he is willing to. Having said this, now we draw some practical implications regarding ourselves. What meaning should the Mass have for us? Quite obviously, we are to, as far as possible, participate actively, intelligently, and fervently in our assistance or attendance at Mass. And that is the whole liturgical movement about which we've heard and read so much, and that stands. On the other hand, to really profit from the Eucharistic sacrifice, keeping in mind that this is no longer just Christ offering himself. It is Christ offering us and bidding us join our wills with his. Get that will in there. Otherwise, you've lost the key. Then it's not merely, though also, assisting at Mass as fervently as possible. We profit maximally from the Eucharistic sacrifice by living the Mass. Though I might almost say, by dying the Mass. What does this mean? This means living a life of sacrifice. Believing as we do, that thanks to Christ's sacrifice on the cross and his continuation of that and enabling us to unite ourselves, will for will, human will for human will, generosity for generosity, a human being, that's he, a human being, that's we, that we can make this sacrifice of the Mass more or less pleasing to him and thereby glorifying him more, the more sacrificial our lives, and in terms of the expiation of sin and the removal of the effects of sin, the more sacrificial our lives, uniting ourselves with that continuous sacrifice which Christ is offering, which is both his and ours, the more effective will be his redemptive work. Because, you see, there is one other big difference between Calvary and the Mass. While all the merits, that is, all the grace necessary to redeem the world, was won on the cross, but, though it was all won, it will be given, applied, or distributed, profited from, only in the degree to which human beings, either in their own persons or vicariously for others, will live out their part of the Mass. In other words, it is not somehow just a psychological construct that the Mass is Christ's sacrifice, period. And that we, by, well, as I say, a sort of construct of our minds, that we sort of piously attach or associate psychologically our sacrifices with those of Christ. Oh, no. The Mass is precisely the sacrifice of the mystical body, head and members. Am I clear? At least not too unclear? So that we, once we realize what this means, should be mightily motivated to want to make the Mass as adorable and worshipful as possible with respect to God, giving him as much honor as possible, the more generously we offer our sacrifice, and more effective, because the effectiveness depends all on us. All right, sisters? The grace is there. But the degree to which that grace will be appropriated, the extent to which the redemptive merits of Christ will be applied, in a word, the degree to which Christ's death on Calvary will have served its purpose depends on our wills. There's an ocean of mercy gained for the world by Christ's redemptive death, but that ocean of mercy must be channeled through human wills offering themselves, they human beings, with Christ, the human being. And we are privileged to make this sacrifice not only for ourselves, but, and this is part of our religious commitment, also for others. So we now ask, what is this sacrifice that we've now used so many times in the course of this conference? I like to define sacrifice as consisting of three parts. Sacrifice is always a surrender. Secondly, of something precious. And thirdly, to God out of love for Him. Let's look for a moment at each of these three and concentrate, as you might expect, on those precious things that we are bidden to surrender. What do we do when we surrender? Well, we let go. We give up. It assumes we have it. You cannot surrender what you don't have. And by definition, surrender is always voluntary. We're not talking about a reluctant surrender after a war that has been lost. It is free. It is deeply interior. And by the very use of the word, we imply that when a person surrenders, he completely gives up. There's a wholeness, a totality about surrender. You don't hold back. What do we surrender? Well, what is precious? Now here, being persons, and persons being individuals, and individuals by definition differing one from another, what's precious to one person may be not quite so precious to somebody else.
Please turn over to side B and push the play button immediately without rewinding the tape.